This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Dr. David Prentice with us on the program. Dr. Prentice is Vice President and Research Director of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which is the research and education arm of the Susan B. Anthony List. He is also Adjunct Professor of Molecular Genetics at the John Paul II Institute at the Catholic University of America and an advisory board member for the Midwest Stem Cell Therapy Center at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Dr. Prentice previously served at the Family Research Council as Senior Fellow for Life Sciences. Dr. Prentice is with us today to talk about the emerging scientific evidence on fetal pain, and particularly why this science is important to the passage of House Resolution 36, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which was recently approved by the United States House and is currently pending in the U.S. Senate. Dr. Prentice, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you with us again, and I appreciate so much all the great work that you do. Before we begin discussing H.R. 36, I wanted to take just a minute to talk about the science of fetal pain to give our listeners a better understanding of what we're discussing today. To what extent do studies show that unborn children can actually feel pain as early as 20 weeks after fertilization or even earlier during pregnancy?
Well, you know, there are lots and lots of these studies. Just to give you an example, we wrote up some sort of one-sentence summaries of a number of these studies, and with the front and back of one piece of paper, we had about two dozen studies documenting the existence of pain in these little ones. As you said, even earlier than 20 weeks post-fertilization, which is what H.R. 36 addresses as a line of demarcation. Some of these show the beginning of the nervous system and the ability to feel pain as early as 8 to 12 weeks after conception. I mean, it's hard to imagine, but really by that point in time, you have started to develop all your various organ systems. Things are kind of in place. There's obviously a lot of fine-tuning that needs to go on, but the nerve pathways have begun to form. You've developed sensory nerves in many parts of the body, and the connections are started to be formed, certainly by 20 weeks after conception, so that you can definitely sense pain at that point in your life.
Well, Dr. Prentice, what do we know from the science of fetal pain about the experiences of unborn children in the womb when it comes to pain and stress? And is it true that unborn babies are even likely to experience pain at more intense levels than adults might?
Well, we do know that they can experience pain, and there's plenty of evidence. For example, simply if I came after you with a sharp object, you would back up, you would recoil, and we see that. For example, when they're doing the amniocentesis for these little ones in the womb to check out and diagnose. We see that in terms of stress hormone responses and other sorts of biochemical responses. And we, of course, see it when we start to measure the nerve responses and so on. As you mentioned, it's very likely from the evidence that these unborn babies experience pain more intensely than adults. Now, there was a study that was published just a few weeks ago, around the end of April, where they were looking at newborns in this case versus adults. And we're talking about newborns anywhere from 2 to maybe 6 days old. What they found was not even experiencing pain, but just a slight touch, like the end of a pencil against your foot. These little babies would even sleep through that, but they would respond, their brains would respond, and 18 out of 20 sites in the brain lit up in terms of a pain response. 18 out of 20 that were seen also in adults that were tested the same way, and they were using a very fancy MRI machine to measure this. They also found that at that stage, these babies responded four times as intensely. Hmm. Now, it turns out, besides the pain mechanism and sensing it, we also have a different neural mechanism that tamps down that pain. So that if I hit my thumb with a hammer, I definitely feel it, but my body also responds and tries to tone that down. So there's a feedback pathway to kind of turn down the pain. That doesn't even start to form in our bodies until almost the time that we're born, and it's not complete until a significant period of time after we're born. So now wind back the clock to 5 months after conception. You're still in the womb. You can experience pain, but you have no mechanism to turn it down.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting. Now, the science of fetal pain is really serves as the basis for H.R. 36, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. The U.S. House passed H.R. 36 on the second anniversary of the conviction of Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell, who is now serving time in prison for killing at least three infants born alive during botched abortions at his abortion clinic. Dr. Prentice, in your opinion, did the Gosnell case play a role in the introduction and passage of H.R. 36 in the House?
I really do think the Gosnell case did play a role. I mean, let's think about what this person did. He would partially deliver some babies and kill them in the process. Mm-hmm. He would deliver some babies, supposedly as part of the abortion, and snip their spinal cords afterwards. And so we're talking about very late-term abortions. But the same principles apply in terms of the pain and the agony that are experienced by these little ones even earlier. So at the 5 months after conception, which is what the bill addresses from then on, it's illegal, if this goes into law, for an abortion to be performed simply because that little person can feel pain. And it's just magnified now in terms of you think about even later on, this person, Gosnell, trying to destroy some of these young lives. And again, in an extremely painful manner.
Well, absolutely. And it's incredibly disturbing what took place in that house of horrors, as it's been characterized. But it seems to have raised the public's consciousness of this issue in a very significant way and really helped to set the stage for even greater consideration of measures like H.R. 36 in Congress. Now, there is a provision in H.R. 36 that is designed specifically to protect unborn babies who are born alive during a botched abortion process, and how would this tie into circumstances like you've described in the Kermit Gosnell case?
You're right that, you know, in the case where there might be one of these sort of botched abortions, and in point of fact, even if an abortion is allowed as part of an exception, let's say a medical emergency or something,
right,
the bill states the doctor performing this, quote, abortion actually has to try to deliver the baby or do this in such a way to give this child the best chance for survival. And then, to even strengthen that point, there's a born alive infant protection part that requires a second physician be present to provide care for the baby and that the baby be immediately transported to the hospital. So the way the bill is written, it tries to give every possible chance for this little one to live and survive.
Well, Dr. Prentice, beyond the fetal pain, many babies today who are born prematurely at or around 20 weeks can survive with medical assistance. A new study actually examined this issue. Can you tell us a little bit about that study and what it found?
That's right. And interestingly enough, it was reported in the New York Times. It's a study that was in the New England Journal of Medicine. And what they found was that, yeah, there are little babies prematurely born as early as this same time for the bill, 20 weeks after conception, 5 months in the womb. So these are very young, tender lives. And it used to be our technology was just not good enough to keep these little ones alive. But what this study found was they looked at a bunch of different hospitals across the country, and they found that now there were some of these little ones, even that young, who were surviving. It was interesting, though. In fact, what the paper found was that if you actually did something, if you intervened to try to save them, to try and help their little respiratory system get going and so on, all of a sudden, many, many more of these little lives survived. Mm. And I think one important point here in this paper that it brings out is doctors should not have the attitude that this is too young to survive or be viable, is what some of the people talk about. But it's not too young to survive, and they shouldn't have an attitude that we're just going to let this little life go because they can't be resuscitated. The paper clearly showed you could intervene in very simple ways to help these young lives, and many of them survived. In fact, a lot of them without any sort of impairment as they continued to grow. It's just astounding, because if you think about it, when Roe v. Wade was passed, most people thought, now, you had to be at least 28 weeks in the womb to be able to even survive that sort of preterm birth. Now, it's been about a week or two per decade that that limit has been pushed past. And I don't think we're actually at the limit yet. But we're at a point where we are seeing, if you do something, if you care for them, seeing a lot of these little lives survive and thrive.
Well, and doctors are also performing surgery on unborn babies in utero. And I think it's telling that often in those circumstances, depending upon what type of surgery they may be performing, based on the abnormality that, the child may have, that they administer anesthesia in order to address the pain issues that that unborn child is facing.
It's one of the most interesting contradictions that, you know, you've got little ones at that same point in time that they're talking about aborting them. And instead, they are now repairing them, doing surgery in the womb, fetal surgery, at that same point in time. I mean, many of your listeners probably have seen that famous picture of the little hand reaching out of the womb,
right,
and grabbing
right.
the doctor's finger, little Samuel Armas.
Mm.
He was about that same age, about 20 weeks after conception. And the fetal surgeons realize that these are little patients, number one, and number two, that they do need their own anesthesia and pain medication. I mean, the leading textbook on clinical anesthesia points out that, yes, this little fetus, using the medical term, is capable of having a stress response and feeling pain as early as 18 weeks. And then they're telling the mother, listen to this, I want to read you just a little couple of sentences here of what they tell mom before the surgery. They tell her, you will be given general anesthesia. That anesthesia will put your baby to sleep as well. But in addition, during this prenatal surgery, your unborn baby will be given an injection of pain medication, as well as medication to make sure the baby doesn't move. Now, these are their little patients. They know these little ones feel pain. They know they can go in, administer pain medication and anesthesia, and do surgery just like they would a patient who was outside the womb.
Dr. Prentice, unfortunately, we are out of time for this week, but I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know how they can learn more about the Charlotte Lozier Institute and about the science of fetal pain.
Best place to go is to LozierInstitute.org.
Great. Let me repeat that website. It's LozierInstitute.org, and that's L-O-Z as in zebra, I-E-R, institute.org. And please take advantage of that information and learn more about this issue of fetal pain. It's incredibly important. Dr. Prentice, thank you so much for sharing your insights on HR 36 and the science of fetal pain, and for being with us today on Family Policy Matters. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.